Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, here we go. Hello there, everybody. Welcome to Talk Show with your host, Wayne Cooper, at the society. Glad that you could join us today. As we stated, today, January the 15th, is the birthday of the late great civil rights leader, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And today, I wanted to speak about at least one aspect of his famous I Have a Dream speech that he spoke about many years ago. We're going to talk about it. And the title of the show, of course, is What Happened or Whatever Happened to Dr. King's Dream? I think that if you grew up around the 60s, the 70s, and of course beyond, you heard a lot about the I Have a Dream that Dr. King gave there, and it was a beautiful speech. But I have a question, because there was one part of the dream, his speech that he gave, and I'm going to speak to it. But I have a question, because remember, he said that he have a dream that one day that his four little children would be judged not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. Okay, and so, but my question is it realistic that in America that we will ever get to a place, or even in society at large, where we will be judged and where we will judge people based on their character and qualifications, rather than on their race or their ethnicity? So I think it's a good topic to discuss on this Friday before we go into the weekend. And so again, I thank you for joining us today here on the Voice of Reason Talk Show. And I was thinking that if Dr. King were alive today, do you know he would be 92 years of age? 92 years of age. He was a great civil rights leader. He was, and our country celebrates him every year on the third Monday of January. So that means this coming Monday, January the 18th, we will be having a federal holiday in memory of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We will celebrate him and his legacy. And so we look forward to that. And, you know, I know some years have passed since Dr. King has passed away. You know, we know that he was assassinated there in 1968 in Memphis, Tennessee. But a lot has gone on in our country since his passing. But he has been etched in our memory and in the history of our country. And our country did something else recently, not many years ago. We honored Dr. King by putting a beautiful memorial bust of him in our nation's capital. The memorial actually was opened to the public on August the 22nd, 2011, and my family and I actually had the privilege to see it during the Christmas holidays in 2015. We had a chance to take pictures, as I'm sure many have who have visited, and it was a delight, it was a joy to be there to see that beautiful bust of that memorial of Dr. King. And we know that Dr. King gave his amazing and powerful speech. In fact, if you have never heard Dr. King's speech, I think that you ought to make it your business to go back. You could probably even listen to it over YouTube, but you ought to give a serious listen to his I Have a Dream speech there that he spoke in Washington, D.C. in front of the Lincoln Memorial on August the 28th, 1963. I mean, to a massive crowd there, to a group of civil rights marchers. And the speech was powerful and moving. And it is one section of the speech that I want to address for today's commentary and for today's discussion. So we know, again, let me just quote it. He says, "I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character." That's a great word from Dr. King. He had that dream that his four children would be judged not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. All right? Think about that. Let those words sink in for a moment. Not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. Now, there's a lot of context to these words, of course, because we know that we're judged just simply and merely by the color of their skin, and that judging was not a good judgment. Okay, and there was a lot of stereotypes, a lot of prejudice around judging. And Dr. King said that his dream was that his four little children would live in a nation where they were all born and raised, that they would live in a nation that they would not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content, by the makeup of their character. That was his dream for his children. And not only his dream for his children, but I have no doubt that was his dream for America's children. That was his dream for all children. Dr. King clearly was concerned for his children's future here in America. Because after all, remember, he was a civil rights leader. Okay? In fact, he was the premier leader in the endeavor to fight for the civil and the constitutional rights for all Americans. So a lot of times when we think of Dr. King, we think that he only fought for black people and perhaps Latino people. But the truth is, he was really fighting for the civil rights for all people, okay? And of course, especially for black people, because during that time, of course, black people were disproportionately left out of the so-called American dream. I mean, blacks were being disenfranchised practically in every way in American life. We're talking about when it comes to job opportunities, wages. I mean, this is real stuff, because I know in the 21st century, maybe it's hard for us to fathom what that was like, but job opportunities, but wages, meaning that two persons of different ethnic groups can be doing the exact same job and be paid substantially different, okay? And then we're talking about affordable housing. So blacks and other minorities could not afford housing. And then we're talking about voting rights. And then there was this thing that most of you have heard of called Jim Crow segregation laws. And that involves the segregation of schools. That is, that you couldn't go to school with someone who was white. If you were black, if you were Latino, maybe even if you were Asian, you could not go to school with those who were white. So we're talking about segregation laws that impacted schools, that even bathrooms. So think about it, that you couldn't go to public bathrooms, to the same bathrooms as your white counterpart. You couldn't drink from the same water fountains. And I want you to know that I was born right in the heat of that, right? Literally in the heat of that. I've seen signs that talked about color here or whites only. I've seen those signs. I know what it's like to have to go to segregated schools. I know what it's like to even go to a movie theater as a little boy and have to sit upstairs while my white friends sat downstairs because of segregation, okay? I just want you to know that I know something about it other than what I read in the book or other than what I heard in a lecture in school, okay? So we're talking about Jim Crow segregation laws. So Dr. King simply wanted America to live up to her promise that within her belief system, when we talk about the Declaration of Independence, that says all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So, but as we know, historically, America did not live up to this declaration and beliefs. She did not live up to her promise. And it is because of that tragic reality, Dr. King expressed his desire for his four children and for all of Americans' children that we would not be judged by the color of our skin, but by the content of our character. Now, I have a question. If you're listening in, I want you to consider it. I think it's a relevant question. I think it's a good question. How has some interpreted Dr. King's words? Because you know his words were left up for interpretation depending on what side you're on. Some of us have heard these words down through the years and we know what they mean to us, but understand that these words were left up to interpretation depending on who you were. I read, actually, where one author says, that quote, let me quote him, he says, that quote can mean whatever you want it to. Dressed up as approval of an American hero whose luster has only grown as his often revolutionary work fades into memory, end quote. Now, what cannot be disputed is a simple message stripped down that in life, we know that character matters. In fact, it is a message that is aspirational, something to live by and passed on to the next generations. But does that ultimate test of goodness remain, or has character been ditched for the sake of political expediency? I want you to think about that. But another question I have, how do you think America has done with Dr. King's words? In other words, have we made it a practice to judge each other by our skin color or do we focus on judging people by the content of their character? I've taken some time to think that through, and I've come to the conclusion that there is two sets of facts that I believe as I've thought these through. When I asked the question, how has America done with Dr. King's words? And I'm talking about since the day, on that fateful day in August 28th, 1963, when he uttered those famous words there in front of the Lincoln Memorial in our nation's capital, when he left, how has America done with those words, historically speaking? We're talking about 60 years ago. How has America done? And I've come to the conclusion, and I really want you to think it through, because I think this is a subject that we need to think about. Because think about this, in America right now, we're seeing a lot of things going on. And notice that the public conversation is around race and racism and, you know, about, we talk about racial reconciliation. But the question is, how has America done with Dr. King's words? Do we judge people by their skin color, or do we see any evidence that we focus on the content of character? And for me, there are two sets of facts, and I've broken them down into what I call a negative part and then a positive part. And so I just want to get the bad stuff out of the way first, the negative stuff, and then we can go to the more positive things. So just going back nearly 60 years, I will say for certain that there is still a judging by some of people, you know, judging of some, not everybody, who still judge people by color, okay? And I think especially with Black people in America, a lot of Blacks and other people of color, but I would definitely say especially Black people, there are some who still judge people by their skin color, okay, rather than by the content of their character. I think that goes without saying, but I want to say it because I think it is a set of facts. And then how do we see that? Well, we see that played out, of course, in racial stereotypes. And we can see racial stereotypes in a myriad of ways in America. And one of the ways we see it is in one of our favorite pastimes, even in when you see Hollywood movies. There are a lot of stereotypes about Black people, in particular Black men, that are not true. But for some reason, we see it played out on the TV screen, on the movie screen. A lot of racial stereotype, but not only with Black people, but with Latinos and even with Asians, with Native Indians, you know, Native Americans, you know, there's just a lot of racial stereotypes that still goes on, okay? And then, of course, we know that we can look in our judicial system and Blacks are still disproportionately put into prison at a higher, you know, obviously at a higher percentage, more than any other ethnic group, I think, in the country. If you were to look at the statistics from the FBI, from the Department of Justice, there would be no question that Black people are disproportionately arrested, tried, and convicted, and put into prison. And not only put into prison, but that their sentences would be longer for the same crime that their white counterparts will have been convicted of. And so I think that goes without saying. Okay, so we see that still goes on in the 21st century in America. okay? And then, of course, discrimination just in general, it still happens. We see it in the housing market, you know, and, you know, it just happened. You know, there's this thing called redlining. We know about that. You know, there are people who can't buy new homes for a lot of reasons because of bad credit and, you know, it's a lot of factors there. You know, job opportunities are not the same. People can't make the money to save up to even put on a down payment for a new home. And then, of course, there is the educational opportunities may not be the same. So to give them the adequate training that they need to get ahead in society. And then there is something else that maybe we don't hear about as much today, but and I have mixed emotion about this because I actually see a little bit of good in what I'm getting ready to say, but I also see some bad in it. I think I see the good intent, and that is this thing we heard of. It is called affirmative action. Affirmative action, or sometimes some people use the term racial quotas. And affirmative action, if you read about it, then maybe you know how it came about. And it came about because there was just an effort to say, look, we want to equal the playing field. You know, is that when blacks and Latinos and Native Americans and others, Asians, you know, when they have applied for jobs or when they've applied for, let's say, a law school, or when they've tried to get ahead in society, it's just their ethnicity that have stopped their forward progress. And so as a result of that, affirmative action policies have been put in place. And so that what we've seen in the past is that people have been put into positions, or they've been hired, or they've been accepted into schools for no other reason than what their ethnicity is. Now, I think the intent of that, as I think about it, I think the intent is good, you know, because, you know, you want to be represented, you know, in terms of the culture of the population, you know. So I think there was good intent with that, but I think the bad side of that is that for the people who maybe got into law school or who got a job or, you know, who was hired at a certain maybe a place of business on the basis of race or ethnicity, I don't know if those person will be received well within those organizations or those businesses on that basis, because then people begin to question, what is your real qualification? You know, are you really qualified to have the position that you hold? You know, like, are you really smart? Are you really intelligent? Or do you really know what you're doing? Or are you in this position just solely because you are a black person or a Latino person? Or what about gender? Are you here just because you are a woman? Like, in other words, we interviewed 10 persons, and maybe of the 10 persons, there were only maybe 3 females and 7 men. And the truth is, just based on the qualifications, just based on the interview outcome, maybe that company felt that the men were more suitable or more suited to be, you know, hired. But because of the quotas of the affirmative action, they needed to hire a female, and then they hired a female, not necessarily because she was their top choice, but because they had to meet their quota. I just wonder about that. You know, how do you feel about that? You know, and so those are the negative things, like I said. But this last one, I have mixed emotion about it, because I do understand the intent. I really do. I have never been a part of anything that required me to meet a quota necessarily, because I went into the military. I served my country voluntarily, so I had to go through an exam, a physical exam, because believe me, if you did not physically qualify, the military was not going to let you in. You had to have a psychological exam, particularly I did because of the nature of my work. I was an ammunition specialist, and believe me, I had to have a strong psychological examination. I had to have a secret clearance, all of that, because I was dealing with ammunition. I'm talking about the real stuff that you work with when people go to war. So they couldn't have any crazies working with ammunition. And so that was pretty much the bulk of my adult work until I went into the ministry full time. So, you know, but at any rate, again, those are things. Now, let's look at some positive things about, you know, when we're asking the question, you know, how has America done with Dr. King's words? You know, do we judge people by skin color, or are we making an honest effort to judge people by the content of their character? So I shared, my friends, with, you know, some negative things, but there are some positive things that I think speaks to the part of the content of character. So, for example, we have to acknowledge that in America, that blacks and other minorities have progressed in American society based purely on their qualifications and their character. I mean, I have looked at this, and I have looked at different facets of American life. And for example, I was doing some background research on the American Council on Education, because I know education is such a big thing here in our country, as it should be. And I was doing some reading from the American Council on Education, and they were talking about how the percentage of minority college presidents has slowly increased over the last 30 years. So that things have increased by, you know, for minorities. We're talking about blacks, Latinos, Asians, et cetera. Now, just give you some statistics from that. So, for example, 17% of college presidents are racial minorities. 17%. We're talking about here in America, right? And now, just so that you'll know, I want to differentiate when I talk about college presidents. I'm not talking about historical black colleges and universities, because for the most part, we expect that those colleges and universities to have minority presidents, predominantly black. So this is separate and apart from that. Okay, we're talking about major, you know, well-known universities in America outside of HBCUs. And so 17% of college presidents are racial minorities. 36% of minority presidents lead associate colleges, okay? Then 5% of college presidents are women of color. Now, that may seem like it's kind of low, and perhaps it is overall, but again, according to the American Council on Education, that has been an increase over the last 30 years, because there were no women presidents, okay, when you go back that far. And so now it's up to 5% that there are 5% of the college presidents are women of color. And so we're hoping that we will continue to see an increase, because what that says, that these people are being judged by the content of their character, their qualifications. Because the one thing about major universities, they don't have time of just trying to hire someone solely on the basis of their color. Because, you know, you think about it. If you have, let's say, a well-known university, let's say like the University of Chicago, a very well-respected university, they have to look for the best qualified person to put in that position. Think about, you know, a university like University of Pennsylvania, an Ivy League school. You know, they have to get the best qualified person, and that best qualified person may very well, it could be a person of color, you know, a black person, a Latino person, a Native, you know, American. So my point is that any minority can qualify. So I want to be clear about that. So the point is that I don't think that they say, okay, well, we just got to have a black person in this position. No, I think those universities, those schools recognize that in order to maintain the reputation that they have and that they have acquired down through the years, they have to have a focus on getting the best person for the job. And that is why when those universities go and they seek to have, you know, to find a new president, that's why they have a team, a search team, a nationwide search team to look for their next president, along with their board of trustees and things like that. So believe me when I tell you that it is very detailed, all right? So, and then, of course, when we come to the area of government, we've seen, I think, one of the highlights that proves this fact that America has progressed in that she has learned to judge people by the content of their character, that America has twice elected a black man to the highest office in the land when she elected President Barack Obama, okay? A very brilliant, very articulate, and dynamic young president when he was elected back in 2008. He had not even been in government very long. He had just been elected to the U.S. Senate in 2004, and then he ran for office just actually less than 4 years later, and he was elected overwhelmingly by American citizens. And so believe me. Now, let me say something about President Obama. The one thing that I give him credit for and that I appreciate about him is that even though, and we understand this, that he, you know, ran for the highest office, and of course much was said about, you know, that he was the first black president. And of course, when he was running for president, you know, a lot was said about that. But it should be stated that when Barack Obama ran for the president of the United States, he did not run as a black man. So to his credit, he did not run based on the skin of his color, but by the content of his character, okay? And that is why I think people of all ethnic groups were drawn to him and who appreciated him, because he did not try to put anybody on a guilt trip. You know, he was not calling people racist, and he was not, you know, doing all of that to appeal to people. He simply presented himself and his hopes and dreams, you know, for America. And so he was elected and then reelected again 4 years later. And so I think that America has certainly has proven that she has moved on to be a land that judges people on the basis of the content of their character. And then more recently, we know that we will have the first woman of color as the vice president here. In fact, on Wednesday, when we have the inauguration of our 46th president, Kamala Harris will be sworn in as the first female vice president, as well as the first woman of color. Now, I must add a little caveat to that, because I need to say that there is a little caveat that I need to come back to that, and I will. But at any rate, we see that. Now, also, there are blacks and other minorities are in the U.S. Congress and, of course, in the U.S. Senate. And with Georgia, the state of Georgia, just electing a black minister to the U.S. Senate, making Reverend Raphael Warnock the first black person to the U.S. Senate. So, and then, of course, moving right along, the opportunity, listen, I think we just should say that the opportunities to excel in America for a minority has no limits, okay? You know, just to tell the truth, just to speak the truth about it. In this country, if you have the mind to work, if you have the discipline, if you have the integrity, the character, you can be what you want to be, okay? And because when I think about this even more, we own professional sporting teams. We have minority owners in the NFL. We actually have a black man who's the primary owner of an NBA team, and Michael Jordan with the Charlotte Hornets. And so America, I think since Dr. King's famous speech, has tried to live up to her promise, to Dr. King's dream, you know, as he talked about it. So, and then let's think about this. I was researching this, and we know that every year that our country allows a certain amount of legal immigrants to come into our country. Now, in 2016, just going back, in 2016, we had 1,018,000 legal, not illegal, but legal immigrants were permitted to come into America in 2016, okay? And we're talking about primarily minorities, people of color, including people from African countries. Now, because I want to address this because, you know, oftentimes when people want to speak ill of America and when people want to call America a racist country, let me just tell you, let me take issue with that. I take issue with that because America is not a racist country, okay? And I'm speaking broadly as far as the country is concerned. Now, I have no problem with acknowledging that there are racist individuals within the country, but I'm talking about as a whole, broadly speaking, this is not a racist country, okay? And because this country permits legal immigrants to come in and to make a better life, and that is why every single year you see legal immigrants line up to come into the country. Now, we know that we have problems with illegal immigration, people who don't want to get in line, who don't want to do it the right way. They're trying to come in. But there are people that we forget about, and those are the people who stand in line, and they come in like these 1,018,000 people did in 2016. They come in to be sworn in and to assimilate to our way of life, right? And they are productive, and they become great citizens, and some of them really do well in the country. And that's because they see America is a land of opportunity. And I've had the good fortune, by the grace of God, to travel to many of the countries where these people come from. And I can tell you, I understand why they're fleeing to America. So I would take issue with anyone who says that America is a racist country and all of that. Well, no, people don't want to flock to a racist country. People don't want to come to a country where they have no opportunity to prosper and to do well, okay? Believe me, many of them know what that's like, and that's why they're fleeing that. But in light of all of that, I have to ask this question, though. Why do those on the left want to abandon Dr. King's dream and focus solely on the color of one's skin? I mean, why do they embrace identity politics? I mean, for the most part, you see it on the left. But because I am a voice of reason and because I am a fair and balanced kind of person, to be totally honest, there are some on the right as well, okay, who know a thing or two about that, this identity politics. But I must say, I see it more so coming from the left, is that every time there's an election cycle, we have to hear about race. We have to hear about racism. We have to hear about who don't like who because of their race. And what it does, it divides the country, okay? It put people at odds with one another. And the question is, why do we do it? Why do people on the left do it? And why do even some on the right do it? Well, let me tell you why they do it. They do it for the same purpose, and that is for money and for power. That's why they do it, money and for power. See, let me tell you something about the Democrats and the and the Republicans when it comes to, for example, illegal immigration. So the Democrats will lambast the Republicans, and they would say to the illegal immigrants, well, the Republicans don't like you, and they don't want you coming into the country, right? And the one reason why they do that is because they want, listen, they want a larger voting block, okay? That's why they want illegal immigrants to come in, because they want to win elections. The Republican Party, on the other hand, the few that want illegal immigrants to come in, because believe me, not all Republicans are against illegal immigration. There are Republicans and conservatives that are for illegal immigration. And guess why? They want illegal immigrants. They want them because they want cheap labor. So you see, they both have motivation: money and power. Now, just in the 15 minutes or so we have left, I thank you for your patience. And by the way, I'm new at this, and so I'm going to be in the next week or so become more creative in terms of how to mix this up so that I can maybe have shorter segments, because I want to give you a chance to call in. And then I'm going to add a part to this where we can have discussion, where some of you can call in. I'm going to be inviting guests, special guests, to take part in our discussion so you can hear from others as well. But just be patient with me. This is just, I'm just starting out. This is only my third show. So I want to assure you that we have some things in mind. I'm going to be creative, but I want to just start out these first couple of shows and just a kind of commentary type thing. Just to kind of get my feet wet. So thank you for your patience. But looking at Joe Biden's economic plan, it's interesting that when we're talking about whatever happened to Dr. King's dream, and of course, one of the parts of that is that we're considering in America, do we still judge people by the color of their skin or by the content of their character? I was reading when President-elect Biden was speaking the other night, and then, of course, on the internet, I was reading some of the things he was saying, and he was talking about his economic plan. And listen to this. Here's a couple of things he said. He says, quote, "Our focus will be on small businesses on Main Street that aren't wealthy and well-connected, that are facing real economic hardships through no fault of their own," okay? And then he goes on to say, our priority will be Black, Latino, Asian, and Native American-owned businesses. Then he says women-owned businesses. And finally, having equal access to resources needed to reopen and rebuild, end quote. Now, I thought that was really interesting that he focused his words on Black, Latino, Asian, and Native American-owned businesses. Now, let me just keep it real with all of you today. Where I see the hypocrisy in all of this is that, first of all, when we think about these businesses, let us not forget, ladies and gentlemen, that many of these businesses that he's speaking about, there were people who were in the White House and in the Congress who were trying to keep these businesses open already. But remember, it was Joe Biden and others who was telling the country needed to be shut down. And don't you find it interesting that all of a sudden Governor Cuomo of New York wants all of the businesses to come back open. Even before the inauguration, he wants restaurants to be open. And yet, since the pandemic has hit, what has he been doing? He's been shutting down Black, Latino, Asian, and Native American-owned businesses, women-owned businesses. He's been shutting them all down. Even when they went to outdoors dining and things, he's been shutting them down. And so all of a sudden now, when a new administration is coming in, all of a sudden now, I want to build back better. No, you want to take the credit for it. So you didn't mind businesses falling by the wayside. By the way, the city of New York has lost permanently over 1,000 businesses due to this pandemic, and because the governor and the mayor of New York City refused to open up the businesses. But now, all of a sudden, now that we have a Democratic administration coming in, so now their focus will be on small businesses on Main Street, says Joe Biden. I think the hypocrisy stinks to high heaven. That is what President Trump and others were trying to do. But ladies and gentlemen, the truth is, they didn't want him to have a political victory. And that is why they kept these businesses shut down. Well, the truth of the matter is this. To use Governor Cuomo's words, he says we had better open now or we may not have any businesses to open to. Well, he may very well have a point. And so I think it's interesting that Joe Biden is thinking about not in the sense of the content of character, but purely on the color of one's skin. As he says, our priority will be Black, Latino, Asian, and Native American-owned businesses, and then even gender, women-owned businesses. Well, what do white-owned businesses say? What about the white-owned businesses that struggles? I mean, is it their fault that the pandemic hit? Is it their fault? Did they somehow do something wrong because they happened to be white and the pandemic came and wiped out their business? What sense does this make? Is that you're gonna select a few people because of their skin color to say, we're going to give you economic help, but for the others, they're going to be less of a priority? That doesn't sound like someone who's trying to unify the country or who's trying to build back better, as he says. That sounds like someone who is being selective. And so I don't think this is in the spirit of Dr. King's dream. Now, moving right along, let's take a look at another example where I see that the judgment is based on skin color and not on the basis of the content of character. So, if you've been paying attention, President-elect Biden, of course, since he was elected, has been picking out his cabinet and his senior staff, as every president has the right to do. So we have no criticism of him, okay? But I do find it interesting. Let's go back when I was talking earlier about Kamala Harris. Now, what I find interesting, because prior to his picking her as his VP, he received a letter from a lot of celebrities, including I guess the person who used to be P. Diddy, now called himself Diddy. And then, of course, there were others who stated very emphatically, unless he chose a woman of color, he would not get the black vote. And what I found interesting is that even when there were other candidates for VP, like Amy Klobuchar, Elizabeth Warren, Pete Buttigieg, and a few others, mysteriously, they all started dropping out for consideration. They started asking Joe Biden not to consider them for VP because, in the words of Amy Klobuchar, she says that there ought to be a woman of color. And that's because everyone recognized the support that black women in particular gave to Joe Biden. In fact, it was black women who saved Joe Biden's candidacy there in South Carolina, because had it not been for the black vote in general, but particularly the black women's vote, Joe Biden would not be president-elect today. Okay? And so what does he do? Well, we heard about other black women. We heard about Susan Rice. We heard about, there's a couple other, I forget their names now, who are already in Congress, black women. And then, of course, he went with Kamala Harris. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let's be honest. Let's keep it real here. Did he choose her on the basis of her skin color or on the basis of the content of her character and on the qualification? And let me tell you, clearly, he chose her on the basis of her gender and also on the basis of her skin color. And so in the 21st century, we're still doing that. So in that respect, that's why I ask, whatever happened to Dr. King's dream of a colorblind culture? Then he chose Pete Buttigieg, and who is an openly gay man who's married to a man, you know, if you believe in that, making you know, he's a part of the, of course, you know, LGBTQ community. And Joe Biden wanted to make a statement to the gay community. But again, why did he choose him? Was it because of his qualifications, or was it because of the fact that he was gay and he was a member of a group of people who supported Joe Biden? And I think you know the answer. It was the latter. So what happened to the content of one's character and the qualification that one ought to have in order to have a position in the highest office of the land? And then, of course, one of the things that Joe Biden says that he would do, he would the first 100 days, he would seek to approve what is called the Equality Act. Now, I took the time the other day, I believe it was on Wednesday, to read on a political website about the Equality Act, because it's what it is. It is primarily dealing with the LGBTQ community and the Equality Act that impacts them. But it also will adversely, negatively impact any and everybody who don't believe in the LGBTQ community's belief system. So, for example, one of the things that's coming down the pike is that let's take Bible colleges and seminaries and churches, what the Equality Act is asking, that if seminaries and Bible colleges and churches don't change their views, for example, particularly the schools, if they don't change their views on homosexuality and transgenderism, that not only will their financing be taken from them, and, you know, assuming that those schools get financing from the U.S. government, but that their accreditation will be taken from them. And so it is a very serious matter, okay? And so that's something to consider. But that's what Joe Biden says he wants to approve in the first 100 days of his presidency. But let me just tell you something, that America has made a lot of inroads in this area of race and racial reconciliation. I was thinking, because I spoke about this earlier, the latter part of the summer, that when you think about the Americas, the American cities, there are a lot of American cities that have been run by Black people and minorities for a number of years. I mean, for a number of years. And guess what? And nothing has changed. Like think about cities like Atlanta, Georgia, who's had a Black mayor, a Black control city council, even a Black police chief. This is a, we all know, a city like Atlanta is a predominantly Black-run, Black-controlled city, and yet it has a high crime rate. It has a high poverty rate. It has some housing issue. Has all of that. And so the question is, why is it poorly run? Why is it poorly run? And so it's like Larry Elder says, why complain about the man when you are the man? Then what about Detroit? The same thing. They've had a Black mayor, Black city council, and then a Black police chief, Black fire chief. Everything is controlled and run by Black people. But we know that it is a dismal city. Then there's Baltimore. The same thing. Black mayor, Black city council, Black police chief, Black fire chief. Predominantly Black city, Black community, and yet the problems, high homicide rate, poverty, just off the charts. I can go on and on and on. What about Gary, Indiana? Compton, California, Inglewood, California. What about Newark, New Jersey, and Ferguson, Missouri? All of this is indication that the issue is that, America has made the effort to judge people by the content of their character and their qualification, and not merely by the color of their skin, though I acknowledge at the beginning of this show that surely we still have some of that goes on. So I would never say that has been fully eradicated. I'm simply saying that it is not what it used to be. Okay, it is not what it used to be. Now, as I close this out, let's simply ask this question. Can we really get to a place in society where we judge people based on character and qualification rather than race? Now, I want to close by saying this. If Dr. King were here today, I really believe this. If he were here today, I believe that he would applaud the progress that has been made towards racial reconciliation and racial equality. I believe he would continue, or that he would continue to encourage this country to make even more progress to that end, but that his main focus would be that every person would be ultimately judged on the content of their character and not by the color of their skin. And I hope that those on the political left and on the right will do the same. Okay?